Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at riders from the horses and riders from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer, developer of Training for Optimal Balance. And with me today is Marcy Drimer, who is a client and a friend. Marcy is a therapist, a new horse owner, and has her husband, Bob, had a serious car accident several years ago with brain injury. And so in working together, all of these things sort of came up in the process of working with her new horse, Gasolita. And I asked Marcy to share some of her experiences and lessons because, oh my God, you have a plate full. And you have such great insights. When we work together, some of the things you say to me are just so insightful. I really appreciate that you're sharing this with other horse owners, because how horses enrich our lives, I think, comes sometimes in surprising ways, you know, ways we don't expect. And when we start to look at things from the inside out, I think that's where it takes on a much deeper meaning that working with our horse kind of filters through our entire life. Like horses and life, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
They just show us what life is about.
If we allow them.
If we allow them, absolutely. Yes, if we don't look at them as something to dominate and submit to our will, they have vast amounts of life lessons for us.
Their wisdom is unbounded.
Yeah. And they're sort of just one of the things I love and admire about horses is that they are who they are. They're just so comfortable with who they are. They don't have guilt or shame or regret.
Oh,
they just move on with life and go, well, this is the best I can do with what I've got. Let's go.
So true.
So I guess to lead off this conversation, as a horse owner, like you are already a professional therapist, you already went through really sort of an extreme part of life with your husband's accident and his brain injury. And then you decided to get a horse. So why did you want to get a horse? Why Gasolita? What were you looking for?
So at the time that I decided I wanted to get a horse, I was 52. I had always wanted to have a horse since I was a little girl. I had always been interested in horses. Like, I liked unicorns. I was always the one volunteering in camp to muck the stalls and whatever, but I had never owned a horse of my own. And my husband's brain injury was really, really, it was hard. It took a lot out of me emotionally. I was constantly giving to him, to my daughter. And I wanted something for me. I wanted something that would be fun and that I could enjoy and like kind of almost like to treat myself like, hey, Marcy, this is your thing. So when we moved back to Maryland, I was like, you know what? I think I'm finally going to do it. I'm going to get a horse. And little did I know that it's not so easy to get a horse that, you know, is, you know, I guess not broke, but like trained and has a decent temperament. And yeah, so I started asking around. I was working with this trainer, and the first horse that I came in contact with before Gasolita was a young lady that he had worked with. He had did training with her, and she wanted to move up to a higher level. And her horse had navicular edema, which I knew nothing about at the time. And, but the sweetest, nicest horse ever. And I went there and I spent a couple of days with her and I was all ready to get this horse. And then I had a rehab guy look at the MRI of her legs of, you know, the navicular edema. I can't in good conscience, you being a new horse owner, recommend that you get this horse. I don't think it's a good idea. And I was really upset, but I was like, okay.
But that is the value. So many people buy horses without a pre-purchase exam. And that was really smart on your part to look at it and get a couple opinions.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, this horse didn't work out. you know, let me see what else. And then somebody had this idea, because I was originally thinking that I was going to maybe do equine therapy with whatever horse I got. So I had mentioned that to somebody and they said, oh, you know, retired polo horses make excellent therapy horses. And you should contact some of the like the private schools and see if they have any horses that are retired from polo. So I contacted this private girls school, which was called Garrison Forest. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh yes, I have this horse and she's been retired for a year and a half. And she's been a pasture mate to a donkey. And so we're looking to, you know, and everything that you're saying that you want to do sounds perfect, because she has a bone cyst in her front left foot. She's sound, but she's not, you know, you're not going to be able to do anything intense with her. And, you know, right. It doesn't sound like that's what you want to do. And it sounds like it could be a perfect fit.
Great. Yeah. So, not good for competitive riding, but perfect for a new horse owner.
Right. Right.
Yes.
So you can edit this. I'm going to close the door because.
Let me just pause. Yep. Okay. We're back. Brief intermission. So with Gasolita, you found her at a girls' school as a mm-hmm. retired polo horse. Mm-hmm. She had a known benign bone issue on the left front hoof that wouldn't mm-hmm. allow competition riding, but was perfect for potential therapy yes. and as a new horse owner learning.
Yes.
Great. So then you get her.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens after that? Any surprises?
Well, first of all, when I met her, you know, she was nothing like the other horse, the first horse that I had met. Like, you would go touch her and she would shake. Like, she didn't want to be touched at all.
Oh, interesting.
And I was okay with trying to move forward and building a relationship with her, because I was taking her on like a lease to own type of thing. Like, so they gave her to me for free. And then after 6 months, you know, so I knew that if there was a problem, I could give her back. So I didn't do a pre-purchase like exam or anything like that, because I was like, well, you know, I'm leasing her and it's free and, you know, it'll be fine.
Right.
But I did in the back of my head say, well, that's rather odd. You know, how come the reaction you get when you touch her is that she shakes all over? It's like she does not want you to touch her.
Mm.
And so when she came to the farm, it was the same thing. Like, anybody that would try to touch her, like, she was like, get off of me.
And crabby.
She didn't want it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was crabby. She didn't want it. She didn't want to be bothered. And so that was kind of like, you know, I was a little bit like, wow, you know, again, my fantasy that I'm going to bond with this horse and we're going to ride off into the sunset. And that was like the first clue that like, okay, this experience is not going to be quite what I thought. So we'll see, like,
the first clue. Yes.
Yeah, let's just see what it has to teach me. Cause it's not all about me, you know, like I always know with everything that I experience in life, like there's a lesson. There's usually, if I wait long enough, a reason, and, you know, it becomes clear to me.
Yeah. So then you get her to the barn. She's obviously crabby, doesn't like being touched. And what do you do from there? And what kind of surprises and any other surprises show up?
So I didn't attempt to ride her when I first got her. I was just like spending time with her. So I would bring her into the big lesson area. I would take off all of her gear and just let her kind of go where she wanted. And then she would sometimes come over to me and I could, like, you know, give her a treat or just, so I just like spent time with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one trainer that worked with her before you. And, you know, he came in with this big Western saddle, the first lesson, and he plops it on her and he's riding her and she's, her head's going up and down like this. And you could just see she was miserable. And he's like, oh yeah, that must be from the polo when they held her head down. She'll be fine. Like, he just had no, but I knew internally, I was like, no, this is not right. Like, this is not how I want it to be. I'm not forcing her. So,
and let me interrupt you just there for a second, because what you're saying is what I encounter a lot, especially with new horse owners, that most people, by the time we can afford to own a horse, we've wanted one our whole life. By the time we actually get one, we're perfectly capable, intelligent professionals, just not with horses.
Right.
And people override, like you really listen to your intuition. You mm-hmm. saw what you saw. It's mm-hmm. obvious. Mm-hmm. And you didn't allow somebody to talk you out of it, which is what happens a lot, is that because we're entering horse ownership, knowing that we don't know, professionals and other people at the barn and all kinds of people surround you going, well, this is right, that's wrong. And essentially are getting us to override our natural intuition. We're intelligent people. We can see what we see.
Yes.
But so many times I see that devastated in people because they just know that they don't know about horses. So they're taking in what everybody else is saying and yes. not listening to their intuition. And I found that really impressive working with you, that you were like, no, I'm going to go with my guts. I'm going to follow my intuition, even though this is all a bit new to me. I can see my horse is crabby. I can see my horse is more crabby being ridden, mm-hmm, not mm-hmm. less crabby, mm-hmm. right? So that you go intuitively, that's not the direction I want to go. And you're in the smaller percentage of new horse owners in that you listen to yourself.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, I have pretty good intuition and I've learned how to trust it. But that's taken a lot of practice. So, but this was there, it was challenging to trust my intuition with this because I got a lot of pressure from people at the barn. When I first started working with you, the owner of the farm, one of the owners, Lisa Reed, had recommended you. Mm-hmm. And she said, just give her a try, see what you think, whatever. And I was like, okay. And so then when I met you and I started working with you, and I really liked working with you. I loved your philosophy and how you looked at horses like the lens, but we were going really, really slow, which was fine with me.
Yes.
You know, but every week I was having someone come up to me. Well, what are you doing with your trainer? Why isn't she I had a technical glitch. What happened? Oh, there we go. Sorry.
There you go. That's
what,
right.
What are you doing with your trainer? Like, why haven't you started like trying to ride her? I mean, you could at least just put a saddle pad on her and have her walk around with that or do something.
Right.
And I was like, you know, this horse is not ready for me to ride her.
Right. So in our very first lesson, training for optimal balance, which is what I call the type of training I do, is the perspective of balance. Mm-hmm. And that crabbiness and that reaction she had to being ridden by the first trainer is the horse screaming at us that I don't feel safe and I don't feel comfortable. Right. And just like overriding a beginner horse owner's intuition, which has nothing to do with owning a horse. We all have intuition and we can all see for ourselves stress versus happiness, right?
Yeah.
And it's also something that people do with horses is override what the horse is shouting at us. And I was very impressed that you had listened to her. And at the first lesson, we talked about why she was doing that. And her body had come to a condition mm-hmm. where she was just protecting what she knew, right. but it wasn't very good function. So she was sore and she could be lame. And that's why she didn't like being ridden. So we looked at just getting her to be less defensive.
Yes.
And there's strategies for overcoming that defensiveness, not wanting to be touched, being crabby mm-hmm. and just mm-hmm. interacting. And I think that's where you began telling me a little bit about what we were talking about with your horse and how that related to your experience with your husband. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, but before I get to that, an important thing that I needed to share was that 2 months after I was at the barn, I brought a vet over to establish her as a patient. And within 3 minutes of looking at her, you know, she shined a light in her eyes and she said, oh, this horse has severe cataracts. She is 50% vision loss in one eye and 65% vision loss in the other eye. Where did you get her from? I said, oh, well, I leased her from this private girls' school. She says, well, you need to give her back. She's not safe for you to ride and she's not safe to be around other people. And I was like in tears because, I mean, I had already been 2 months with this horse and I was like, how could she be saying this to me? And I had no idea. And they never told me, Garrison Forrest. And the truth of the matter is had I known that, I don't know that I would have taken her, because I would have been not felt like as a new horse owner that secure enough, like that I knew what I was doing. Right. So, but Lisa Reed, the owner of the farm, and you really, really encouraged me, you know, to stick with it, and that you would support me and that I could do this. And,
it doesn't have to be a big impact. And having at least 2 months with her, you were already starting to experience that as she relaxed and you guys bonded and she became less defensive, yes, the eye issue wasn't presenting itself as a huge problem, but no, it was also a good reason to delay the riding and do a little bit more groundwork before getting on her back.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that reaction under saddle could have been related to poor vision, as well as sort of the development of her body being a bit unfit and out of balance.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it was, what was also interesting to me was how the people in the barn responded when they heard, because they were there, mm-hmm, when I got this news. And it was like the barn manager was trying to get someone to lease her horse. And her first reaction to me was like, oh, listen, you know, sorry that it didn't work out with your horse, but I've got my horse over here that you can lease if you want. And I was like, I don't think so. You know, yeah, I need to take some time to think about this. And,
yes.
So related to my husband's brain injury, it was really ironic, because I came home, I told him what happened, and I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't, this isn't what I signed up for. You know, remember my fantasy? We were going to go riding off into the sunset.
Right. For some me time.
And this was like, I didn't sign up to get a horse that was almost going blind. And, you know, so the initial part of me was like, is this really what I want? Is this really whatever? My husband said to me, you didn't give up on me with my brain injury, and you cannot give up on this horse. And he was the one, I'm not saying I wouldn't have kept her, but he was the one who really encouraged me to keep her and to work with her. Like, he just, his heart, like, he felt such compassion for this horse and everything that, you know, that she had been through. And he could just relate to her as like, I mean, maybe he saw that as a disability or whatever. And he was like, it's not, don't throw her away. You know, she's not worthless. Just like,
yes,
you know, him with his brain injury, you know, like you have to look at people and not assume that you know what they're here to offer on this earth or what they're capable of just based on, you know, their disability or what they're presenting you with.
That is so beautifully said. And for people as much as horses, or we could say horses as much as people.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that just gives me goosebumps, because, you know, going through like the significant brain injury was not something you really signed up for. None of us do. Yeah. But you, at the same time, you don't think, oh, just send him back or be done.
Well, ironically, you know, we were involved in a big lawsuit because we were hit by somebody, a truck that they didn't repair the brakes. And, but so when I met with the lawyer and he found out that my husband had a brain injury, the first thing that he said to me was, I just need to let you know that 80% of marriages where somebody has a brain injury don't survive. The spouse.
Wow. Leaves.
And I just looked at him and I said, well, that's not going to be my marriage.
Yeah. Good for you.
You know, so I just did everything that I could to try to take care of myself, to try to learn everything I could I'm not going to say it was easy. It wasn't. He's a lot better now. It was like a day by day thing. You know?
Absolutely. And the body, it's like you're learning all this medical terminology. You're learning about the issue. You're learning about various protocols to overcome it. Then this protocol doesn't work. And they say that's the end. And then you find another protocol that kind of works. Yeah. And that's what rehabilitation is. I go, it is just a personal journey of discovery. I don't care whether it's your husband or your horse. It's like
such a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And the only time it fails is when we quit looking for new information. That's when the failure actually occurs.
Wow.
But as long as we're looking and trying, we never fail and we gain information. It doesn't mean we get the sort of, I don't know how to say the success according to the world, but like you said, the things that transpire, the lessons we get out of it, maybe is the very reason.
Yes.
Right. So it's not that we have to achieve this perfection during rehabilitation, because the value of the individual is being shown throughout the process.
That's such a good point, because before my husband's brain injury, what he valued about himself, he was an engineer.
Mm.
He valued his brain and what he could do with his brain. And he was an athlete. You know, when I first met him, he was mountain biking, skiing, windsurfing. He was like, you know, a type A on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And after the brain injury, he couldn't do all those things. And he couldn't do engineering. He couldn't do all those things. So then he was like, he really had to figure out, well, who am I and what is my worth?
Yeah.
And what happened, you know, the beauty in it, it was painful, but the beauty in it is he started to realize that, like, the relationships that he had with me and with my daughter, and slowing down, which he had to do because of the brain injury, and being more present and spending time, he actually said, I like myself better now than who I was before the brain injury. Not that he's not sad about the things he can't do, but he would have never come to that if it wasn't for this brain injury. I know. I don't think his relationship with my daughter would be what it is, or even his relationship with me.
Yeah. And that's amazing. And it's not actually all that surprising. He encouraged you to keep Gasolita, because here you are, a new horse owner. You've got an older retired horse who's already, mm-hmm. you know, now has a little bit of a bone issue, can't mm-hmm. compete. She's cranky. She doesn't mm-hmm. want to be ridden. Mm-hmm. And the vet's saying she's probably mostly blind. And it's like, yeah, not. Yeah. And ironically, that story is really typical of new horse owners.
Oh, really? And which aspect of it?
All parts of it. So for example, I rode for years on lesson horses as a kid, and at 16, I bought my first horse I actually owned, and I went out. He was the right price, all of $1,000. He was the right color. He was bay, and he was he was the right size. He was over 16 hands, and he was a thoroughbred. That was all I knew. I had no idea what it meant that he was 30 days off the track with significant hoof injuries on both hind feet from a gate starting accident. You know, all those other things I found out after I owned him. But like you, my intuition's very strong, and I have kind of a dog with a bone personality. I don't give up on things. And the frustrating, I think the thing that made me interested in even becoming a trainer was that particular horse. Trainer after trainer that I sought help with kept telling me, you're a very good rider, dear. What you need is a better horse. And I'm like, but I like this horse. He's the right color. He's the right breed. He's gorgeous. He bucks me off all the time. What do I do?
Right.
And that was so frustrating to me. And I still see the same words, the same advice, the same strategies with new horse owners today. And I am well past 16. I go, over 40 years, it hasn't changed.
Wow.
But
it's just like with people, right? So like you get into a marriage and you start having some issues in your marriage or problems, or there are things that come up. And then a lot of people will decide, oh, this isn't the right man for me, or this isn't the right marriage. They get divorced, they go on to somebody else. And then there's a different set of nobody comes perfect and like ready made. And we have to be willing, I think, to put the commitment and the heart into whatever relationship it is, whether it's your marriage, your child, your animal that you own, you know?
Well, and horses, what we call horse problems, I call private lessons from our horse.
I like that.
Because horses as prey animals are highly sensitive to energy and imbalances, especially within a predator. So they have a sensitivity level of sort of reading people and knowing what's going on the inside of a human much better than we as predators can read horses.
Right.
And so they work on our weaknesses. Those are the private lessons that our personal horses give us, is they sort of know where we have imbalances or weaknesses, and they bring them to the surface. They show them to us, and we call those problems in the horse. But really, it's just a horse being a horse, showing us where we need to grow or change or develop or strengthen. So what we call horse problems are usually a horse sort of pointing out to us where we could use a little bit of improvement.
That's a really beautiful way of putting it.
And so I call them private lessons. And the funniest thing is the same horse will give the same person the very same private lesson relentlessly for years until we change.
Right.
And I go, that's why I love what you want to do with your horse, which is, you know, equine assisted therapy. Because I go, horses are fantastic. It's sort of going in and like a dog smelling something, right? And like a bloodhound. I go, they can kind of go in and pull something out of the human that we can't see in each other.
When I first got her, that's what I wanted to do. And as I've gotten to know her, it's been interesting. I haven't started doing it. And I have been asking myself questions like, is that really what she wants to do? Is that really the right thing for her, given what her history is? Like, I'm looking at it much differently than I did in the beginning. Mm. And, you know, I, which really surprises me, because I was sure this is what I was going to do.
Yes.
And I'm not sure now. I'm not sure that that would be the right thing for her. And especially with what just happened that we're going to get into with my daughter.
Oh yeah. Why don't you share that whole sort of story and scenario? Because that's a perfect example of kind of looking at from different perspectives at what we call problems.
Right. So you and I worked together for, I don't know, 5 months or whatever, like all the work was on the ground. Finally, I was able to get on her, you know, bareback, and then we put a saddle on her, and, you know, maybe we had 2 lessons, and I was just so excited that after like 6 months of having her, I'm finally riding her. And my daughter, who's 12 years old, had been coming to the barn with me, not with the same regularity as me, but she still like had a bond with her. So I naively said one day, hey, do you want to ride her? And we were just in the, you know, in the ring, and Alexa, my daughter, was a little bit nervous about it, but she's like, sure. So she gets on her, and within 2 seconds of getting on her, Gasolita took off running around the ring. Like I've never seen her run that fast. My daughter was petrified. She fell off the horse.
Ugh.
And she was just so upset. You know, she was like, you didn't protect me. How did you let this happen? And I was like, I don't even know what happened. You know, I didn't even understand what happened. I was like, why did she do that? Cause you know, yeah. She hadn't done that with me.
No. And you just don't see it coming.
No, I didn't see it coming at all.
Yeah.
And then I think I called you and your words of wisdom and advice and the way that you framed it made perfect sense. You said you made the assumption, and a lot of people would, that because you had this really close, trusting relationship with her, that it would translate over to your daughter. And it doesn't work that way. Like she had
not necessarily. Learned. Yeah. And especially like Gasolita is an older retired horse. So yes. She does know the difference that there are different types of people from her experience in life.
Yes.
And you took the time to really earn the trust, develop, you know, lower her defensiveness and mm-hmm. kind of get her to let you in.
Mm-hmm.
But that is still new enough, even after 6 months of that, that isn't Gasolita's life experience.
No.
And so putting suddenly a different rider on her maybe just triggered an old memory. maybe yes. spontaneously made her feel defensive because she didn't know this rider as well as she knew you.
Right.
So all of her defensive strategies came right back to the surface.
Oh, 100%. And I hadn't seen any of that because when I was working with her, she was shut down.
Right. When you first got her, she was very shut down.
She was like, because I did equine acupuncture with her, mm-hmm. and the acupuncturist came out and she said, similar to you, you know, you could ride this horse, but I wouldn't recommend it because, you know, she's really shut down right now. She sort of has this attitude, like, I'll do what you want, but I'm not real happy about it. And she's like, that's not the kind of horse that you want to get on, you know? Right. So.
No, and that's the difference between when we think of training as obedience training, and nobody's really looking at the balance in the body and the mind and the actual physical development of the horse, Gasolita, and not that anybody ever did anything wrong, but she was sort of a utility vehicle for yes. the purpose of Polo.
Yes.
And for a long time in her life, that was fine. She had a youthful, talented body. She probably right. had very good riders.
Yeah, so she was a high level Polo horse from what I was told. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's having, you know, competitive level riders. She's not dealing with beginners, right? Which is a different experience from the horse's point of view to have a balanced versus an unbalanced rider.
Yes.
And so with nobody doing anything wrong, she had just arrived at a place in her life where she was like, I'm sore. Don't touch me. I'll do what you want because it keeps me out of trouble. I don't get punished,
right?
But I'm not liking it. I'm not happy right. about it. I'm going to let you know with my expression or reaction
yes.
that this is not working for me.
No. So, you know, I had never seen that behavior in her. All the behaviors that I had seen in her had been shutdown behaviors, like, you know, trying to avoid, you know, walk away, body shut, but I never saw her flee.
Right. Like and that. Even the first couple rides, because I was the first one on her, she had a little skepticism and a little reaction, but you had done so much groundwork and relationship building that she really was rideable in one session.
Yeah. So I could have never predicted that that would happen. But what that told me after that happened, that made me rethink what I want to do with equine therapy and everything, was that, you know, this horse has been through a lot more than you think she's been through. And she has given you the gift of allowing you into her inner space of trust. You earn that. And, you know, I don't know that she's going to want to do that with a lot of other people. You know, it's really hard for her to do that. And when I saw what happened with my daughter, that's just really what made me think about it. I was like, you know, maybe that wouldn't be good for her. I don't know.
Well, and it maybe isn't appropriate yet for her, but it's still possible.
Yeah, that could be.
Because as she sort of heals, and I think what happens is when we think of horses as our sort of tool of sport, or we're just even with the best of intentions, not really paying attention to how the horse is receiving the interaction.
Right.
How do they feel safe? Do they feel comfortable? How are they viewing the work we do together? By just sort of not even paying attention to that, the horses can gradually become more and more and more defensive. Yeah. And you can unravel that, but it might be a few people at first, and then as she gains more confidence, more and more. But that internal experience is something you can't rush it. You can't force it. You can't make it happen. You can do a lot of things with a horse, but you can't make them like it.
No, and you can't make them trust you.
You can't make them trust you, and you can't make them like what they're doing. That has to be earned.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I look at having a true partnership with a horse. I go, it has to be a partnership of mutual benefit, not just my benefit at the expense of how the horse feels or thinks or moves in its own skin. It's like that mutually beneficial relationship is really key to living the dream. I go, if you really want to live the dream that we all fantasized about, riding down the beach with our hair blowing in the wind.
Oh, yes.
I go, you need a horse.
Well, look above my head. You see
those horses? There you go.
That was my fantasy. We were riding on the beach. This is easy.
Absolutely. And then you go, ooh, I've got some work to do before I can get there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's so interesting. And this is where other people will look at the work you've been doing with Gasolita. And it's not uncommon for people I work with a focus on internal operations and internal balance. The work we actually do looks pretty simple, almost mm-hmm. like you're doing nothing.
Right.
And so outside observers will come in and go, when are you going to ride that horse? When are you going to work that horse instead of just, you know, dicking around with these silly exercises?
Uh-huh.
And it's very common across the board at every level that observers, when we take an internal focus of what's going on with the horse in mind and body, the actual techniques and work we do is very simple. Mm-hmm. And so people have no clue what's going on in the dynamic relationship between us and the horse, because it's invisible.
Right.
We feel it. It's tangible to us. We observe it. But outside observers kind of look like it's a whole lot of nothing going on.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
And yet the horses transform. The riders transform because the changes are taking place deeply inside. And that's not something you can force or rush.
No, you can't.
And I think you shared a story with me about that very lesson of not rushing,
yes.
not forcing. Part yes. of it was with your daughter.
Yes.
Going, oh, I made some big assumptions.
Yes.
Maybe I shouldn't rush things.
You know, I was all ready to start my become an equine therapist, and we had just moved, and I was kind of like on over fire wanting to do all these things. And as the universe or spiritual energy, that's the way I look at it, sometimes comes to teach us lessons. So about 2 months ago, I had some childhood trauma that surfaced that I was unaware of. I mean, I had known about other childhood trauma that I had worked on, and I felt really good, and I'd helped other people with their trauma. But now came something of mine that was pretty big, and it was overwhelming, and I didn't like it, and I was really uncomfortable, and I just wanted it to go away. I just was like, I just want to get rid of this. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to
you wanted to bolt and buck
yes,
and run around the arena.
I wanted to bolt, just like yes. a horse. I wanted to bolt and make it just go away.
Yes.
And, you know, through working with Gasolita and seeing how long it had taken me to get to the point where I could ride her, and then that experience with my daughter, every time I would go in the ring with her, I would be reminded of how slow I had to go. But then looking at the relationship that I had with her and like how beautiful it was now, but that it took a lot of time and I couldn't force her, you know? And like when my daughter got on her, that was forcing her to do something she wasn't ready to do. And it just was like such a good reminder to me that, Marcy, you've got to go slow. Like you can't just get rid of these, you know, traumatic memories that you have and push them away and whatever. It's not going to work that way. You know, right. you have to be patient. You have to allow, you have to work with it. You have to be gentle. You have to go slow. You know, these are all the things that I have been doing with Gasolita. And, yes.
Because
and I kind of looked at her and said, well, if she could do it.
Yes.
No, I don't know what kind of trauma. I don't know. I think being used as a polo horse could be kind of traumatic, you know, and like, you know, but the thing is that if she could learn how to trust, if she could change and I see her personality change, then I know that it's possible to do it. And I know how hard it must have been for her to trust a human. I mean, she just thought that humans wanted to use her for their own gain or whatever. So she sort of inspired me. Well, if she could do that after being treated like that, where she has no choice, right? Like, because
right.
we try to sometimes, I didn't, but, you know, make them do what we want them to do. Like, they don't get a choice whether you put a bridle on them or whether you, you know, whatever. If she could do that, then I could do that, you know, like she just inspired me.
Because horses don't choose their person. The person chooses the horse.
Right.
Horses don't choose to be ridden. We choose to ride them.
Right.
And they learn to cope with it as best they can. But I had the same epiphany working with a lot of rescue horses. One of the things I learned from horses was forgiveness. And I went, oh my God, as soon as a better deal comes along, they don't hold on to the past. They have fantastic memories. They remember, which is part of what takes time to rebuild trust. Right. But as soon as you offer them something better in a relationship or with work or being ridden, they take it. Even if they have horrifically abusive past, and most of them don't. I find most horses become defensive or sore or break down out of ignorance with the best of intentions. It's just that we're not highly educated about body function and looking at the horse's mind. Mm-hmm. We still think of it more like dog training. You know, like if they're being obedient and doing what we want, we're golden.
Right.
But we don't factor in with horses that, unlike dogs, we're going to straddle their spine. We're going to put a moving, living weight on their back, and we're going to go do a lot of athletic things that they might not ever do in nature.
Right.
And I go, we just don't think of it that way. So what happens is these defensive mechanisms grow over time to what you stepped into, which was a crabby horse. Mm-hmm. Don't touch me. Right. Mm-hmm. And then as you unraveled that, I think the beautiful part that we learn from horses is how they let it go.
Yeah.
They don't let it go all at once, just like you're describing with any, because I think trauma is more how we perceive something happening to us on the inside more than what actually happens to
100%.
Us. 100%. And so that's the experience of horses who have very little choice about their life. They're getting things done to them all the time. And so of course I've had horses with PTSD. Of course I've had horses that are neurotic. You know, all of those sort of psychological issues happen with domestic horses as well as people. And to unravel that, what's different between horses and people is horses just aren't complicated. So they show us that if you just let it go and take a better deal, life gets better instantly. Like, okay, we're good.
It's very simple.
It's very simple. Yes. And unlike us, horses don't have the brain capacity for vast amounts of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't imagine anything better than their current experience. And I think that's why when we help them feel safer or feel better in their bodies, they just take it. It's like they just look through life going, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Good deal, bad deal, good deal, bad deal. But it gives me goosebumps because the value of owning a horse is not necessarily just in riding them or doing a sport. I go, just that interaction of getting all these surprises with a horse that most people are telling you, send back, get rid of. And you stuck with it. And she showed you, just by being with her and watching her kind of blossom again and come out of a traumatic past and trust and soften and be willing to work with you, like enjoy the work with you.
Yeah. Well, you saw it, I think, in the round pen the last time you were there.
When absolutely.
You were like, she just kept coming back to me. Like, she didn't have to. She could have just walked away and...
She chooses says, to be with
she
you.
She chooses to be with me.
And that's something you can't buy. You earn, you know, and the horse feeling happy on the inside, you can't buy that. You can't make it happen. You earn it, which is what you've done so well with her. And then she gives back this process for you to deal with your own internal trauma.
Yes, she absolutely is giving back this process to deal with my own internal trauma. And again, I wouldn't have chosen this horse.
Yeah.
This is not the horse I would have chosen, but if I had given her back,
I would have lost out on all these opportunities. I could have had, you know, a horse that didn't have all these problems or whatever, but I would have never learned what I'm learning from this horse. And
And it's deeper than just riding.
Yeah.
It's much deeper. Yeah. And what's funny is I don't help people buy or sell horses. That's not part of what I do as a trainer. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for that is I would help somebody select a horse that was really appropriate for their level and mm-hmm. their personality and blah, blah, blah. And they didn't like that horse. And invariably people would go pick a horse and buy it that was like, okay, you're going to go down a pretty steep path of learning with this choice, but it's doable. And I found even people who got frustrated with the horse they had and wanted to get rid of their problems by selling the horse and buying a new one, again, 100% of the time, they went out and bought a horse that was just like the one they sold.
Or worse.
I go, or worse, but usually different color, same horse.
Yeah.
And I go, I don't know what cosmically why that happens, but I've seen it happen so many times that I'm like, everybody just pick their own horse. There's no rhyme or reason to why we fall in love with certain horses. But I do find the horse we're attracted to and end up buying from a heart connection or out of ignorance or whatever also holds sort of the unique personal lessons for that rider. I don't know why it works that way. I have no idea, I just see it happen. So I'm like, I don't even bother buying and selling horses.
It's the same thing with humans. So in relationships. So like, for example, because I used to do couples counseling, whatever, and always you would find in a couple, you know, somebody who had huge abandonment issues, you know, in their family of origin or whatever, what do they end up attracting? They end up attracting somebody who's not really available. He's a workaholic or he withdraws or, you know, whatever it is. And they're like, but this is exactly what I did not want. You know, how did I end up with this? And I think
that's so interesting. Yeah, that we do it in human relationships as well as how we select horses for our horse relationship. And it must be the brain is most comfortable with familiar.
Yes,
we are change,
with familiar. Yes.
Yeah. Change starts the helmet fire. It's like, oh, yeah. We just don't want change. So it's interesting. Your story is so fascinating with all the different facets of new horse owner, husband with a significant brain injury, and then also being a therapist. And I really thank you for sharing all this with everybody, because it's an example that isn't uncommon across the board to all new horse owners and all horse owners who get horses that they didn't plan on or expect.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably most people.
Yeah. And even if we do our due diligence with pre-purchase exams, all of this, like we learn as we go, we become better shoppers. A vet was just telling another client of mine, even with all of that due diligence, there can still be issues lurking in there that nobody has seen, and they only show up after several months of horse ownership.
Yeah, because just like with humans, until you feel safe and comfortable and whatever, sometimes you will keep those parts like hidden, you know, they don't come out all the time. Like you get used to, you know, when you're first meeting somebody, they're showing you their best self and, you know, so you just don't know.
And even with Gasolita, with the eye issue, I know when you went back to the girls' school, they had no idea. They weren't withholding information. They just had no idea that she had cataracts, never occurred to them to check. Wasn't something they were looking for.
I was flabbergasted by that. I don't understand. And maybe that's my ignorance about the horse world, but I was like, the vet called me and she was just so apologetic on the phone. She said, I am so sorry. You must think I'm a horrible vet. We were so focused on the bone cyst. I don't know how we missed this. I was like, well, I don't know, but she's got them and they've been there for a long time. You know, because I had an equine ophthalmologist come out too, and just to double check. So it's not like a trauma did not happen to her eye and they developed overnight. They'd been there a long time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Another thing that,
But those are the kind of things, even in a super thorough pre-purchase exam, there are things like that that just either aren't on the radar.
Right.
Right. Because the horse has been functioning. Why question? Right. A lot of times when the horse gets really spooky or dangerous, the eyes are something we would look at.
So they don't typically look at the eyes? Like
They might in a pre-purchase. Some vets would, some vets wouldn't. But it would be something that could be easy to miss on a functioning horse. We assume they see just fine. Wow. So it's not that unusual for it to be overlooked on a pre-purchase.
But what's interesting to me, what that also told me about her, about Gasolita, was I was like, look at this horse. She was playing high level polo with, you know, this bone cyst that they didn't know she had for a long time, which actually was pretty advanced, not just like a small bone cyst. And then she had vision loss.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking to myself, like, how courageous she was, how like, I just can't even imagine, like, you know, and she just kept going.
No, the horse's vision is, it's almost like it would be the equivalent of if we had to work permanently in our peripheral vision. That's what their normal vision is. They don't see objects clearly like we do with our focal vision.
Okay.
They see the world with a sort of peripheral vision. So they're highly sensitive to movement, but they don't see the detail of objects. Yeah. So that's why sight issues might not become obvious for quite a bit of time. Right. The other thing is, and I think I told you long before I was a trainer, there was a woman in California who rode this beautiful Appaloosa out in the mountain trails of California. And we would run into each other at the park all the time. That horse was 100% blind. I did not know that horse was 100% blind.
That's incredible.
And what horses with riders are able to do is follow the eyes of the rider. They follow the guidance through their highly evolved sense of touch and feel. That's their main form of communication. We're heavily visual, but they are primarily kinesthetic in their communication, sense of touch. And so with a rider playing polo, the rider is telling the horse where to be all the time with the body. And that's why she could function with even in a high level sport, or this woman who rode the 100% blind horse. And I mean, single track trails up and down mountains. These were not big, wide roads and flat surfaces.
What an amazing trust she must have had with her horse and her horse had of her to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
That's incredible.
And I feel so lucky to have just stumbled across people like that in my life, where I've met a lot of horse people or horse owners or riders or horses where I go, they have overcome odds and can do things that I never would have considered possible had I not actually met these people. It wouldn't have occurred to me that you could ride a 100% blind horse if you had a good relationship with them, which she obviously did with this horse. He trusted her to be, and she would say that I'm his eyes and he's my feet and we get along just fine.
Oh, I have to tell you, I don't know if I told you this. This is kind of cool. Just the way the universe works and how serendipitous, you know, whatever you believe. So before I got Gasolita in December, it was my birthday. And my daughter gave me a book. She just saw this book. She didn't know what it was about. And it had a picture of a horse on it. And unbeknownst to her, it was the true story of this horse that was blind. And the horse, this woman who wanted to work with kids and whatever, ended up with this horse. And it was the whole story of how she felt so ill-equipped to deal with this blind horse. And she didn't know how this horse was going to work with anybody and how this horse ended up being like the best therapy horse that they had ever had or whatever.
Yes.
So, and at that, I read that book like 2 months before I got Gasolita. And,
oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Serendipitous.
Yeah.
So any final things you want to share with, through your journey, Gasolita, Bob, therapy?
The one last thing I just want to say is just sort of a shout out to you, because you really, really have helped me and you gave me the confidence to know that I could do this. And you were so gentle and patient, and just how you were and how you are.
Oh, thank you.
And with all the other horses, like I think that these horses are so lucky to have you. And I wish that more trainers could see horses through your eyes the way that you do.
Thank you. It's a long process of like owning and loving horses that basically are labeled difficult.
Yeah.
That was where I moved through the ranks. Like that was, instead of going out and showing, which was my original dream, I kept landing with horses that had big problems, despite my best effort. And then when I first started training and teaching professionally, I realized there were a lot of us out there with big problems with horses, and nobody wanted to help them, just like nobody wanted to help me. The only advice I got was sell the horse, you're a good rider, or send them to be broken by a cowboy or a trainer or whatever.
Right.
And I remember thinking as a teenager, like, well, what's the sport or interest of that? I may as well get a bike.
Right. Right.
And so in kind of learning that there weren't a lot of resources for people who loved their horses, but also had a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, that's where I'm going to specialize.
That's
that journey has been incredible. I've learned so much, you know, and I always felt a little behind for my own horses, but in the process of just trying to solve my own problems with my own horses, I had to go through mountains of information and just learn and learn and learn and learn. But that also has allowed me to go, there's potential in every horse and every rider. Like I just am doggedly refuse to be defeated. I go, no.
But that's not something you learn. That's something that you already have inside of you.
Mm. Well, it's put to use with rehabbing horses and teaching people.
I think that's a gift that you were given.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But I don't want to make this about me. I wanted to
you. So. Whatever. It's okay. You're entitled.
Thank you for the nice compliments. And thank you to everybody who has listened this far and joined us for this podcast. I'm not sure what I'm going to title the podcast yet, but something like Horses in Life. It's all the same. But thank you so much, Marcy, for taking the time to meet with me and really sharing things that are personal and vulnerable from your heart. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it. And thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. And we'll see you guys next time.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.